This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek back in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings, and I'm actually in Norman, Oklahoma. Surprise, Glenn. I'm not in
Phoenix. Yeah, I was surprised.
You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 28th, episode 1768, brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, horse world.
Horse Nation.
This episode is Do Try This at Home.
Leslie.
Failure is always an option. Any result's a result, that's for sure. Or not.
Hi, this is Katie Kelly calling to say congratulations to Leslie for conquering the Mongol Derby. I think it was so amazing and inspirational to me, and the whole week I was just thinking about Leslie the whole time and tears coming to my eyes every time you could see that little dot move. And I was just incredibly proud and excited to participate in cheering her on. I even took a bubble bath and thought of her and thought, I'm having a bubble bath for Leslie today. So congratulations, Leslie. And we're all so proud of you and so touched to have been part of your journey.
Katie said it all. It's Leslie Day. We have her with us. We're going to bring her in just a minute. But first, I want to, on a serious note, just wish our friends in Texas the best. Keep safe. Our thoughts and prayers are with all of you. We have a ton of listeners down there, and I know Leslie has a ton of readers down there. And what's happening is just heartbreaking with Houston and everything, all the flooding. And, you know, we have some hosts down there. I will let everybody know Mary Kitzmiller is fine. And Sammy Joe, who is a friend of ours, who has the exotic animals, lives down in that right in there. And she's had some flooding and things, but all the animals are fine. Her water buffalo is loving it, she said. So, so, you know, and I know we have a lot of listeners and they've been reporting in. We just wish you all the best. Well, Jennifer, I'm going to go right to you. What is coming up? Like we don't know.
Coming up on today's Omega Alpha Equine Monday edition, Leslie will be sharing her most recent lifetime adventure because
Leslie, you okay there?
Yeah, you're all right. Leslie, hold on, Jennifer. Leslie, are you okay? Did you fall off your horse?
A disaster. No. No, actually my kitten just knocked my coffee off.
Oh, of do you have to go clean that up?
Fine.
That could be a more perfect way to start this.
First world problems. So good to have them again.
Sorry, right. Jennifer, carry on.
Yeah, we'll give you a minute. Jennifer, start over. Give Leslie a minute and talk slow. She needs to clean up the coffee.
Okay, I'll go slow. Coming up on today's Omega Alpha Equine Monday edition, Leslie will be sharing her most recent adventure of a lifetime from start to finish today. And then mid-show, we're going to have a recess, and that will feature a discussion of gut issues with first world horses featuring Dr. Jang. And then in the third leg of the show, listeners are going to be calling in and asking Leslie questions about her most recent lifetime adventure. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Did we talk slow enough? Is that okay now? Are you back? Are you back? Okay, good. All right. Leslie's here. Leslie's going to do our daily winning to start us off.
Oh, man. I just want to thank, I mean, everybody who's followed me and supported me and sent me well wishes, and, you know, especially the Horse Radio Network Auditors Group. I got to come home to some of the sweetest, most thoughtful care package that they put together, Chantel especially. I got a freezer full of pies. Amazing. Whoever made that lemon poppy seed pound cake, I destroyed it. you guys are amazing.
Well, the Chantel who put that together just called in to talk to you. Do you want to talk to her?
Yes.
Okay. Chantel, are you there?
Yep. Good morning.
Good morning. You are so sweet. So sweet. You have no idea how much that meant to me. Just, it was such a big, big welcome. And you guys have been amazing from the get-go and just all the way through to the finish line.
Well, if we could have sent you an entire semi, we would have, but that would have been a little logistically challenging, so we decided to go with a box instead.
So, Leslie, how this whole thing started is Chantel posted in the auditor's Facebook page room, hey, we're thinking about putting together something for Leslie. Does anybody want to donate some money? And then I'll go buy everything. You don't have to do everything. Well, it was money. It was handmade items. It was trinkets. It was gifts. It was just everything that people could think of to participate in providing you with a piece of comfort when you got home, because it was so entertaining to all of us to watch you put yourself out there that we all felt like we just wanted to let you know. So Chantel came up with this idea, and long story short, she got so much dang money for all the stuff that it would have taken a semi to fill out to spend all that. So in your honor, we actually donated the extra money to Minnie Sarah and her kidney transplant foundation that she is fundraising for. So you just bought yourself a kidney, Leslie. Woo!
I think you can get those on the black market in Ulaanbaatar. So you guys should just let me know. Picked one up. No, seriously though, that means so much to me. You have no idea. It's really makes it worthwhile.
Well, thank you, Chantel, for
good.
Putting
I'm glad
together
you enjoyed
too.
It.
We appreciate you and all the auditors who helped put that together, and you were great. And organizing all that. I know it took a lot of work, more than you thought it was going to. So.
Oh, it was so much fun, though. I do have a quick question for Leslie, though.
Oh, you're breaking
Which
up on us.
Which pies have you tried?
Oh.
Is that better? I closed my classroom door.
Oh, man. You know, so we're sort of a bacon house of bacon around here, and pork. So the pork and apple one was that was the first up, and it was amazing. Tell me about where those came from.
Those are from the British Pie Society in Savannah, Georgia. My mom and I went and visited Savannah this summer, and we ate there way more than I would care to admit because they're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and once I found out that you can buy their pies and have them shipped to you, I was like, okay, I'm sold. So everybody's getting pies for Christmas from me as well.
And they're meat pies. Did you just say a pie? That's not a pie. Peach pie is pie. So you just ate
they're like savory pies.
They're savory pies. Jamie doesn't know about savory pies.
British style.
Yeah. All right, Chantel, thanks a bunch. We appreciate it.
Okay. Yep. I'll talk to you guys whenever I get on next. I have to go teach now. Okay.
Right.
Bye.
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 Go educate young children.
Yeah. All right, Leslie, it's time to tell a story. So let's start at the beginning. And we all kind of followed you on your flight over, and you get there and you go into training camp, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We had a day of orientation in the capital city, Ulaanbaatar. And then they bussed us. It was probably a 6 or 7 hour bus ride out to start camp, which we didn't know where that was going to be. And then we actually, at the orientation in the capital was kind of a whole bunch of PowerPoint presentations on basically outlining all the different ways that we could get hurt or get in big trouble and or how we could break the rules. Could you
always call it the Capitol? Because like I feel now yes, it's like super Hunger Games.
Yeah, it was totally Hunger Games. Like they were just all up in this nice hotel and yeah, I shot a bow and arrow.
Apple.
and bus ride out
7 hours to the middle of nowhere and the Capitol's watching and carry on.
And then we had a couple of days of training on with the horses. We got to go out for a test ride. Kind of they the first batch of horses they brought out were like deceptively, they're like, these are like the starter horses, the deceptively like they were actually like sweet, pretty well trained, safe Mongolian.
It lied to you.
just like in the Hunger Games. Confidence up before they crushed us completely. And but it was neat. It was, so we got to go out and, you know, try navigate, you know, make sure we had to sort of like navigate out to a GPS checkpoint, and prove that we could use our Garmins. And then they had all sorts of really neat entertainment for us. They had like a Nadama children's race, which was pretty amazing. Like all these kids, I mean, you throw a 3-year-old up on one of these horses and it can ride you under the table. super duper humbling. But yeah, it's just this big kids race. Most of the kids are bareback. Nobody's got helmets, you know, nobody's got body protectors. They're just letting it fly. And then they had, you know, like they had traditional Mongolian music and a contortionist, which was really exciting, and some master classes in skills like hobbling a horse, which I've never, you know, typically in the eventing world, there's like, you know, stalls that we can put our
hobbling's not common
event stuff, so hobbling. But now, I mean, think of how much money am I going to save on stapling at events now? Sorry, princess. Like, is Leslie's horse just loose out there? Nope, it's hobbled. All right,
she's Mongolian. Don't worry about it.
Mongolian.
So you spent 2 days in training, and are you allowed to talk about the thing you wrote about in one of the articles? By the way, you can find your first three articles at horsenation.com. Are you allowed to talk about the first introduction to Mongolia even before you headed out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You guys, since you guys have been following me since the beginning, you get some deep cuts here on the story that didn't make it into the series, the written series, because, you know, didn't want my mom to read them and be even more worried. I don't know if they could get any more worried.
Not listening now. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is how Derby Day One begins for me. I think I alluded to it in the most recent story, which, by the way, I've got three parts of the series, which is probably going to be a 4-part series, maybe a 5-part series, out so far. And you can check any of those out on Eventing Nation, Horse Nation, or Jumper Nation. But yeah, so I wake up, wake up about 5 a.m. on the start of the race morning. They had us all staying in gurs, as like there maybe there were five people to a gur, and I woke up and look up and there's a Mongolian herder, a drunk Mongolian herder, trying to get in bed with me, and so we all, you know, like all, I mean, I'm in the gur with, you know, some ferocious ladies and we all shoot him out, you know, but, it's like, man. So, and then we're kind of, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I was like, well, I'm not falling back asleep after that, and you know, just laying awake thinking about the race was about to start, and about how I had to go to the bathroom. so me and Rachel, who I've told you guys about, and has been on the show before. She is from South Carolina. Fantastic gal. And so we walked out to, they had like a restaurant, little portable restroom trailer set up. Very fancy, very fancy compared to what toilet facilities to come. So we're like walking across, and at some point I noticed that herder dude has following us. And so we get in the trailer, and I'm like, okay, Rachel, you got 30 seconds. Go. And then, and meanwhile, like, herder guy gets close, and he's just sort of like lingering menacingly in the doorway of the trailer. And, so we come out, and he's, you know, he's just kind of like, standing there holding his ding dong, which was, for the record, much more ding than dong, waving it around at us and talking. You know, who knows what he was saying in Mongolian gibberish, but, and we yelled at him and, went back to the, you know, he kind of like stumbled after us. We just went back to the car, and that was how the race began. Race morning, even before we got to the start, he did get arrested later on. Rachel ID'd him at the second, I think the second horse station, and he apologized and got arrested. So
welcome to Mongolia. Yeah.
I mean, it's not anything worse than could happen to you, like here. On the subway.
Yeah, exactly.
That exact same thing happened to me on the MARTA in Atlanta. So I'm like, and it's just, it's so disgusting and mm-hmm. it's so violating and it's so nasty that, oh my gosh, of course you couldn't sleep. Oh, and it's not like you can lock your door because it's a tent.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's awful. I'm so sorry. That's not a great way to start, but moving on. Dong ding thing. So sun comes up. It's time to go.
Time to go. Yeah. So we had a kind of group prayer, and there was some passing around of incense type thing. I wasn't quite sure what was going on. Lots of chanting, but I was into it. I was, you know, I was like, whatever I need. I need, you know, it was a good meditation before we all got started. And then went out to the start, and it was really funny because, the horse that I'd done my training on came in last place in the Nottom, like not even close, like by far mile back, with this little kid. And then the horse that I drew for, it was all completely random, who we would start the race on. The horse that I drew for the start of the race was the winner of the Nottom, which was pointed out to me. And I really did not have any big plans of showboating at the beginning of the race at all. I didn't even turn my GPS on because I was just like, you know, I'm just going to flit with the pack for a while, go with the flow, follow the herd. It was a big mess at the start. Everybody's horses are, because now they brought in the fresh horses that are not the sweet
kids horses,
like training horses. This is the real deal. And, thankfully they phased out shooting a gun for the start. They just, because you can imagine, I'm sure that, you know, I think that would lose several people in the first leg back when they
oh my gosh.
So we've got 42 horses, circling around waiting for the start of this, and everybody's, you know, just, you know, everybody's, all the riders too, they've been training for this thing, for this moment for months, and they're just ready to get on with it. So lots of, adrenaline in the air. at the start, and they count us down. We're off, you know, and I managed to stay on my horse at the beginning, which was seemed like a real, you know, accomplishment. And then the horse goes into like Seabiscuit mode. From the get go, he starts weaving, and I'm just like sitting back and you do you, horse. And he's weaving through the pack and weaves all the way. And suddenly we're out front. And then suddenly we're out front by a lot. like just leaving people in the dust. The only person who was kind of close to us was this guy, Ed, who ended up actually co-winning the race, but he was an Australian Olympic pentathlete. And I was like, Ed, dude, you got to keep up. Like, I tried to pull up my GPS, but I can't see. I've got tears in my eyes because we're going so fast. It comes up. I've got the zoom not thick, you know, I've got it zoomed in weird or out weird or something. Anyway, it's just a arrow on a great screen, not helpful at all. So he basically kind of like navigated me through the first leg of the race. I don't know what kind of warp speed we were going at, but we couldn't even see the pack anymore. Everybody's going at full.
And you can't, you don't slow your horse down when they are running. You just go with it, right? You just let go and hang on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we got way out front. And I'm like, oh man, this is not what I was expecting. And then some other people caught up, and there's a little cat and mouse for the end of the leg. We all got into the first horse station together, about, you know, I don't know, I think there was like six or seven of us. So we have these horse stations throughout everyone. And it's really cool the way that they do this, but you come into the station and there's a vet, and you've got to trot your horse. They take your heart rate. They check it for dehydration. They check it for, you know, to make sure that you haven't pulled, rubbed their mouth, or there's a saddle sore, or they check the horse's condition. You've got to be at 56, you know, your heart rate's got to be 56 within 30 minutes of arriving at the station, or you get a vet penalty. And which is fantastic. It keeps, you know, it really discourages people from just riding the crap out of their horses and then not cooling them down properly. It really encourages good horsemanship. So
now, Leslie, is it like a 10-minute box or the cool down after a cross country? Are there buckets of ice? Are people sponging the horses and scraping them? Or you just like, I assume by the laughter, that would be a no.
There's no like buckets of liniment, no water at all. I think they're not really into, cooling horses out with water so much. A lot of times we would try and find, even if we had to go out of our way a little bit, water throughout the leg. We see something on the GPS and try and navigate out to a creek or a river or a little lake or something. Very rarely was there water at the stations. It was really just a matter of, you had to do your homework before you got to the station as far as making sure your horse was cooled down properly. You couldn't just dump some ice on him and, you know, and everything was going to be come down. You know?
When you're riding these horses, because you have to prepare them for coming into the station, you can't just haul ass to the station to station. So when you're riding, are these horses, they're fairly wild. So is there a time where you're like, okay, we're going to walk for a while, and then, okay, back to the canter? Or is it just you gallop them out and then you walk all the way back in? Like, how's it work?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody had different strategies for that. For me, I kind of like this whole race, I put a whole lot of stock in, the, letting horses take care of themselves and choose their speed, choose their path, like just really listening to the horses instead of, because these horses have been doing this for centuries. You know, they know how to take care of themselves. They know how to navigate the terrain and stay out of trouble, and keep themselves sound and well and healthy. And who am I to map my, you know, like little pony club Western notions of what, you know, mm-hmm. how to manage a horse onto them. So, what I tended to do was let the horse pick its speed and then eventually they would slow down at some point. Uh-huh. and make sure that we had I would get off the last couple kilometers out and loosen their girth and walk them in and let them have some grass and just kind of let them choose, dictate what they wanted to do. And it seemed like if you weren't pushing them, if you weren't stop, start, if you just kind of let them find their rhythm and the pace that they were the most comfortable with, and let them stick it there, then they would, I didn't have a single vet penalty the whole race. So,
you were one of the very few too, because most of them had them. I noticed there mm-hmm. were very few that didn't. So let's pony club.
What's up?
So now you got to that first horse station and then you actually rode out, and most people didn't. And you ended up staying at the shopping mall, according to our map.
Yeah, that was, I was way out in the lead, by really luck. I just kept drawing good horses that day and, that first day and, found myself at the third horse station of the day with an hour and a half to go. And I was way out in front, and I thought, you know, the smart thing to do would be stay here at the horse station and, you know, like this sort of race endorsed family girl, and where they can take care of my horses, and I know where I am, and
which is what you told your husband.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah,
we heard that, by the way.
Yeah. it was really funny. By my thing that I told Tommy, I was like, you know, and I really meant it when I said, I was like, I'm not going to ride alone. I'm definitely not going to stay out alone. And by the second leg of the race, I'd broken the no riding alone rule. By the end of the day, I'd broken the I'm not staying, you know, camping out by myself rule. But
well, it's not like it helped being around other people, because you still saw some weirdo wiener.
Yeah, exactly. You still got sexually molested. So
That's true. So I thought, man, I don't know if, you know, everything could change tomorrow. I don't know how long I'm going to be. How often are you in the lead of the Mongol Derby? I'm going to own this day. And so we decided to ride out. And it was like, you know, if I stayed at the third horse station, I'd be tied for first with however many people. But if I rode out, I would have, you know, like there would be one morning at least that my husband, Tommy, would wake up and you guys would wake up and everyone just be like, what?
That's exactly our reaction, by the way. That was our reaction right there.
Yeah. Spit out your coffee. So I decided to ride on out and see if I couldn't just find a Motel 6 out
You
there.
Did. You found the shopping mall, according to the map. So what was that like? Did they have like a, you know, a Nordstrom's and...
So for those who don't know, she actually makes it to, on the GPS, what says, I think it was the Golden Meadows Shopping Mall.
Yes.
Were you riding for the Golden Meadows Shopping Mall on your GPS, or was it just dumb luck that it was like the perfect time?
It was not. That is hilarious to me, because it was not. It was a girl in the middle of a goat field. Like a total GPS fail, or somebody, you know, Google Maps joke that they're, you know, because there was nothing remotely
They weren't selling anything. There was nothing for sale at the shopping mall.
Nothing. No, no, there was no shopping mall. No, it was a GER. It was a piece of, it was a canvas GER in the middle of a field. That was, I have no idea where that, how, you know, why that showed up on the GPS like that. But no, but I did know that it, the only thing I knew was that it, the, our route kind of ran parallel to a road, which that we did not. There were not too many roads that we encountered along the route, but I figured that there would be something along the road, like somebody would be living along the road somewhere, and hopefully they would take me in for the night. So,
all right, well, and you did. You went, and we have to get to Dr. Chang here shortly, but for our Monday update from Omega Alpha, but you stayed in the GER, right, with the family.
I did. Yeah, I did. They
and that was that in. Less harrowing than the first GER that we just talked about?
Yeah, right? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely, yeah, it felt safe.
And it was cold, right? It was like freaking cold.
Yeah, it got really cold that night. Some bad weather came in and, it was raining, storming all night, and we rode out in a storm the next morning.
And that leads us to the story everybody wants to hear about. And that is, of course, your pony that decided to split on you. So we're going to tell that
Pure
story.
Update.
Yes, we're going to tell that story. We had a whole lot of fun talking about that while you were gone, too. So we're going to tell that story right after we get to Dr. Chang, who is here for his monthly update from Omega Alpha Equine.
Leslie, it's your potty break, because yes. I got to talk to Dr. Chang, because I get more questions than you can imagine about this one particular topic. And Dr. Chang is going to talk to us about it today. And that is gut issues with the horse. Good morning, Dr. Chang.
Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And talking about, I think it's so appropriate that we have so many live listeners listening to Leslie, because this is the probably, would you say, the most common thing that you deal with?
Definitely. Every horse I know comes up with some gut issue at some point in its training, in its life, etc. And in competition, gut issues are the biggest thing. But one thing a lot of people don't think about when they talk about gut issues is that the effect that competitions have on the horse as a nervous stomach. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it as a person. If you've never given talks before and you go and give a talk, what happens is your stomach gets tied up in knots, right? And that's because there's a connection between the brain and the stomach. And when you have just prior to competition, you feel as if you're stressed, so that pumps more acid out. And the acid, if you have an irritated stomach, like an inflamed tissue in the stomach, that just irritates the crap out of that section. So your horse is not too comfortable.
I was just going to say, I mean, you talk about giving a talk. I mean, my gosh, I compete and I'm a disaster. And I put myself in that situation. The horse is... They don't know. They didn't sign up for it. They didn't send a check. You know, they did. They're in that situation going, what the hell is going on? So a lot of times, you know, especially when they're green and they're learning and they're traveling, and all of that can be incredibly stressful. Sorry, Carrie.
Sure. One of the other things that I was alluding to also is that sometimes, you know, think about it. If even when your stomach is good, but if you start chewing gum, what happens? Chewing gum releases acids in the stomach. Next thing you know, your stomach feels are crummy, so you spit out your gum, right? But
right.
Think about the horse. When you put the bridle in the mouth, right, the horse knows he's not having any food, but that there's a message that comes from your brain that says, hey, food's coming, because they have very little control over that. And that bridle actually stimulates saliva release. Saliva mm-hmm. release then stimulates acid production. So again, if your horse has a little irritated area in the stomach, next thing you know, he or she is going to be releasing acid in the stomach. And again, irritation and pain. So we have a little trick for that one. What we suggest people do, you know, we have our GastroFX Ultra, which is a tube product. And basically what that will do, or even the GastroFX, what that will do is that prior to putting the bridle on, you give it about 60 cc's. And what you'll see is that a remarkable difference with your horse's behavior, because that GastroFX Ultra and that GastroFX, what it'll do, it'll basically help control that acid release. It'll help coat that stomach a little bit. So you have a horse that's a lot more comfortable going into competition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this is the thing too, Dr. Chang, is sadly what happens a lot of times is the horse has a behavior issue that then people go, oh, this horse has this behavior because he's a jerk, you know, or whatever. And it's actually, I find that like 80%, if not more, bad behaviors come from pain. They're all pain mediated. You know, the horse isn't out to get you. You know, so
that's right.
This GastroFX is fantastic. Now, I know we're here to talk about it, but you guys all know that I'm a huge fan of Biotic 8, because having Biotic 8 on board makes the gut the healthier place. It gives you a better starting point, you know, with everything, and then to use these products. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. The Biotic 8 is fantastic, but it's but I call this like a long term treatment. It's like give for the gut, because long term use, the longer you use it, the better your gut will be. So it's like giving yourself a multivitamin for the gut, right? When you use GastroFX, like a multivitamin, you take it, you strengthen your system, etc. That's how the Biotic 8 will work, because it changes the microenvironment in the gut to a healthier. A gut with a lot more healthier bacteria in there, you know. But sometimes, as I said, it's all the, you know, just prior to competition, you don't want a horse that because they're in pain, they don't want to cooperate, right? And over many different disciplines, I'm talking about dressage, I'm talking about show jumping, I'm talking about eventing, you know, even reining, all those things. Because every horse, as soon as you put that bridle in the mouth, they're going to salivate, right? Wow. And if you have any irritations in the stomach area, it'll cause pain. And when that causes pain, you have a horse that doesn't want to cooperate, right? Even though some of the horses will power through it, right? They're like people, right? Some horses will power through it. Some horses will just say, none of that, especially if they're younger horses, right? So in a way, this is a very good way. It, you know, even with nerves and so on, you know, if the horse's stomach is feeling good, you know, you have less issues with, I call it, and I put it in quotation mark, nerves for the horses.
Right.
You know.
Right. So you suggest GastroFX. I like the Ultra because it's in this tube and you can just give it right to them. It's like a dewormer tube, but actually doesn't taste like dewormer. It kind of tastes good.
The horses love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The horses love it. The GastroFX Ultra, definitely. It's a convenience. What we've done with the GastroFX Ultra is we've added things like magnesium and some other supplements to it that seem to work faster. So, you know, just prior to competition, prior to putting the bridle on, 15 minutes or so before the bridle, just give them a shot of the GastroFX or the GastroFX Ultra. You'll see a very different horse, for sure.
Now,
when you go into competition.
Oh my gosh, Dr. Chang, I can't give my horse this medication because I'm competing and he's going to test positive in the drug test.
Not this product. There's no testing. This one will not give you a positive test at all. You
of
know,
course not.
Because we've checked it, right? Mm-hmm. Now people will say, oh, there's magnesium. Etc. But magnesium is only illegal if you inject it. It's not oral. There's no problem with oral magnesium at all.
Okay, fantastic. Well, you guys go check these products out at OmegaAlphaEquine.com. That's where you can find all of, you know, it's an easy website to navigate. You can go, you can look at all the things for the joints, the kidney, the liver, the lung, the muscles, the gut, you know, all of those things on the side. And of course, contact Omega Alpha if you have any questions. There's a big contact us button on the website. Dr. Chang, this is great information. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about it. Again, it's the most common question I get. So it's nice to know that when is the best time to use these things.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Dr. Chang. We'll talk to you next month.
Bye-bye, Jimmy.
Good morning, Leslie. This is Hillary. I just wanted to say I am so proud of you. What a great adventure. Thank you so much for taking us along with you and keeping us updated. I have two questions. I wanted to know if you had a favorite horse out there. And the second one would be, what part of your riding experience was the most helpful? Thank you again so much, and I'm so happy you're home. We're so proud. Bye-bye.
And we'll get to those questions. Thank you, Hillary Borneman, for sending that in. But first, we're going to hear about your least favorite horse. So tell us about that fateful day. You head out on this nice little pony who then robs you blind.
Yeah. So, you know, I was still right up at the top of the pack, starting out day three, and it was the second leg. And I think you never, ever pick a pony or a boy for its good looks. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Because, duh.
Jamie, you failed at that one, by the way.
Pretty boys, you know, I picked this pretty boy pony off the line after the first horse that I picked, which was sort of I kind of went for the like tiny scrappy looking alley cat looking horses. But this one would not let anyone put a saddle or bridle on it. So I thought, seems outlook not good for getting riding it. So I picked another horse. It was gorgeous blue roan. And he just like charmed my pants off for about, the first 10K of the ride, to the point where I thought, you know, I'm really hot. The sun had come out. I'm going to take my raincoat off. Dismounted. And before you have to understand, getting on and off these horses is probably the most dangerous part. Every time you put your foot in the stirrup to get on, you just don't know. You know, like I'd say it was 50-50 whether I ended up on the horse or ended up sort of like backpedaling and jumping back off, you know, like being like, that's not going to work that go around. I'll try it again. Cause they would, you know, they they just don't have standstill manners. They would, you know, rear up or buck or, you know, skitter off sideways. And meanwhile, you know, it's not like in a herder's trying to hold them down, but sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But this horse really had me convinced that it was a rational, sentient being. Perhaps
he's your friend.
He's my friend. He's beautiful.
Buddies.
Yeah. And so I stopped to get off and take off my raincoat. And in the process, the horse just bolted. And I tried to hang on to him because you're riding with reins and a lead rope, exactly for this purpose, so that when you jump off, you can keep hold of them. And he dragged me across the rocks for a few strides and pulled the lead rope out of my hands and went galloping off into the sunset, never to be seen again. Like literally, they never found the horse.
Yeah, that was our most asked question by listeners all week. Did they ever find the horse? They never did find the horse?
They never did find the horse.
So that horse is wandering around with a saddle under its belly at this point?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I think that eventually they always find the horses, but it could be weeks. You know, there are no fences. There's nothing to stop the horses from, you know, joining up. I think he just joined up with another herd and was done with it. And so at some point, the owner of that herd will be like, this isn't my horse. And it had brands on it and it'll eventually get back to its owner. But
this isn't my horse, but I sure do like this iPhone 7.
Yeah.
That's in the
saddle and this nice $300 sleeping bag.
Right. All of which, for the record, I'm totally at peace with, because, you know, especially from being out and experiencing this culture and being in the family homes of some of these herding families, they need that stuff way more than I do. Maybe not my iPhone. I don't know what they're going to do with an iPhone 7 out there, but like a nice warm sleeping bag, a basic first aid kit, some, you know,
Leslie, a utility kit. Leslie, let's make a donation after.
Yeah, okay? You didn't need to donate during the race. You could have waited.
Well, yeah, they could have left it. I could have made the donation after, but
yeah. So part of the problem though, aside from your sleeping bag is attached to this horse, your kit, all of your things that you're packing, it also had your stirrups because you had your own stirrups and everybody put their own stirrups on each saddle every time they would get on a pony. So you have no stirrups at this point. The horse is gone. You're in the middle of nowhere. What do you do?
Well, I did. I pressed my help button, and the crew came out eventually and picked me up in their Land Cruiser. We looked around for the horse for a little bit. They, you know, dispatched some herders on motorcycles to look around for the horse, no dice. So they brought me back to the horse station, where I'd started. And I was kind of sitting around, you know, feeling a little bad for myself and, watching, you know, my lead slip into the ether. Other riders were coming through by this point. And then at some point, the Maggie Pattinson, who we've had on the show before, she's the race ref, was like, "Hey, if you want to keep riding, you can. We have a saddle. We have an extra saddle. There's just one catch. There's no stirrups." And so I'm like, sold, you know.
Like, you're like, just so you know, I invented No Stirrup November. Yeah, so I'm in.
Yeah, let me remind everybody, it's been 6 months since November. So,
but yeah, so I figured, well, might as well, you know, I should have spent more time, you know, training for this, you know, maybe a training routine of like crushing beer cans with my thighs or something would have been helpful, but you got to work with what you got. And so I headed out and did the next, it was a long leg. It was a 40K leg. So which comes to about, I don't know, 25 miles or something.
At what no mile stirrups. Marker did you start to regret that?
Actually, it was a great leg. I immediately kind of figured out that I had two speeds, walk canter or gallop. There was not going to be any trotting. I would not get out of trotting with get away with trotting with my inner thighs intact. So I kind of would walk down hills and canter on the flat or canter up hills. And it was the most beautiful leg. We are going through this incredible valley, with just mountains rising up on either side of it. And you could just see the path in front of you just like unfolding through. It just went on and on forever. And I was on this great horse. You know, I'd asked the translators to pick me out a horse that was not going to kill me because wasn't going to have any stirrups. So some of these horses that I'd ridden, you know, they'll be in the next, you know, they'll be 20 feet off, you know, jump 20 feet to the side if they see a broken vodka bottle. And so I needed a sweet horse, and he was so sweet. And, it was a beautiful day and it turned out to be a great leg.
So you're cantering along, no stirrups, going, "Life is awesome. This is so great. I love it. I'm so happy. I'm so glad I did this." Even though you had no stirrups. Leslie Wiley, you're my hero.
Well, what else are you going to do? What else are you going to do?
No, that's exactly right. It's like, keep going or quit, because the Blue Roan is headed to Russia at this point. Yeah. Or China. Could be either. So you completed, and what was going on while you were doing that, by the way, is they tweeted out about you galloping, and I think that the Mongol Derby even put out the video of you galloping, and it was just like every one of us was like toasting you and cheersing and celebrating. We were like, she rides on. It was like my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah, there must have been. So even though out there, we just felt like we didn't know anything that was going on in front of us, behind us, we didn't know where we were half the time. And certainly we had no idea, you know, you guys who were following the race from home had a better understanding of what was going on in the race than we did. You know, we were just cantering along in our little cloud of dust, oblivious. There must have been some sort of cosmic, you know, you guys' support energy and cheers like must have made it. I must have felt that on some level.
We have invited callers to call in at 10 o'clock, so we'll get to them as soon as they do. If you want to call, it's 435-272-1997. So, you know, there's so much more to this. And look, we're an hour in and we've only gotten to the point where you lost your pony. So I want to ask you a couple questions, and then we'll let everybody else read on horsenation.com all about that. But I've gotten some questions. And what point did you say, okay, I can't possibly be in the lead again, and you just settle in to have a good time as much as you were going to have at that point?
I think it was about halfway through the race, you know, after the setback with the tack, and then the next day I just got a horse that just really quit on me, in the middle of the ride. And I just had another really slow going sort of day. And at the end of that day, I was like, I'm not going to make it, you know, the finishing in the top 10 is not in the cards for me. So at that point, I knew, which was fine, because at that point I was like, no, just surviving this race is going to be a very real challenge and accomplishment. And I knew at that point that what was imperative first and foremost was to surround myself with good people who are good, going to be a positive, you know, bring a positive energy to the table, and hopefully I could reciprocate that. And then that's what I did. Found a great group of people who kind of had a similar ethos to me, who were like, let's enjoy ourselves. Let's appreciate this experience that we're in the middle of, and this opportunity that we have to see this incredible land and be a part of see a culture from the inside out.
Well, that leads to Hillary's question that she had. What training did you have that you felt helped best you get through this whole thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think all
no stirrup November, obviously.
No stirrup November.
Which we're changing to badass Leslie No Stirrup November.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not any specific exercise or training routine. I think it's just sort of life experience of I've had hardships in my life that I have sort of given me the opportunity to see the bottom of myself and become familiar with, you know, sort of what's down there and what I have to call on when I need it. And I think that I had to call on every last bit of that in the race at some point to get through and to keep going. And so I think just like the best training was all the stuff, you know, throughout my life that I've found myself enduring, because, you know, that was training.
Well, speaking of your bottom, I have to ask, how was the food, and did you get violently ill at any point?
Man, most of the food, forget what you heard, it was amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, Jamie, it wouldn't be amazing for Jamie. Let's cut her out of this conversation. Yeah. You didn't see a vegetable, did you?
Unless you're a vegetarian. unless you're someone, I think that if you're a person who like needs to know what you're putting in your mouth, then probably you're not going to have a good time. But if you can just be approach it with an adventurous spirit and just be like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to eat it and, you know, experience it, then I think that it was a pretty cool culinary adventure.
Did you get violently ill at any point?
You know, only the illest I got was I had ordered some like shrimp spring rolls or something in the hotel in the capital and got pretty sick from that. But
so you got your food poisoning from the hotel? There you go.
But during the race, you know, and there's things that you're eating, you're like, this should probably, I mean, some of the water was like brown, you know, with fleety bits in it. And some of the food, you'd be like, you'd find yourself like picking a hair out of it or like swatting flies off of it, you know. But so I'm like, maybe it should be. But I think, I don't know, if your body just kicks into some sort of
defense
mode or what. But I was fine the whole race.
Wow. Well, good. Yeah. I'm glad, because that was the thing we talked about a lot, was you spending most of your time behind a bush, which there weren't any. So that would have been tough.
I love it. If you're a person that would like to know what you're putting in your mouth.
Yeah, that's the quote of the day.
That's quote.
Now, we have to ask you about fermented mare's milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exceeded my very low expectations. It kind of tasted like really tart, like melted yogurt or something, maybe with like a spiked with a little vodka or something. It was not so bad. It was not. I mean, I would not seek it out in my life for sure, but as far as just like a ceremonial sip here and there, it was not revolting.
Okay, see, this is the exact reason that you undersell, because then it becomes an over deliver. So we really freaked you out about everything, and you're welcome, because everything turned out great.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Leslie, okay, but one more question before we get to some callers that are lining up here. So, and I have a message for you too from your friend Devin, who sent a message all the way from Japan. So she wanted to give you a message. But at what point in the race, everybody does this, whether you're any adventure you're doing that's truly grueling like this, you have that point where you don't think you can do another step, where you don't think you can get on another pony. And when was that?
Oh man, you know, I think it was the whole second half of the race, starting with this I put out last night, put out a part three of the race series. But when things started to get pretty tough, so I would have kind of moments of that for about the entire second half of the race. Luckily, I was with some people who, I mean, we were literally just pulling one another along, and it always seemed like somebody was up, you know, somebody was doing okay, somebody was in the dark night of the soul, and we were constantly sort of cycling through that, and whoever was doing all right at the moment, we were, you know, kind of pulling the rest of the gang along, and you know, I think I played both roles in equal measure.
All right, good. Well, you want to start taking some calls?
Sure.
We have Barb, who says she's a family member of yours, wants to ask you a question. Good morning, Barb.
Aw, Aunt Barb.
Good. Good morning. It is Aunt Barb. Hey, Leslie. You badass girl.
Aunt Barb.
We are so proud. We're all so proud. But here's my question. Drum roll, girl. Are you going to do it again?
Oh, my God. Yeah, Barb.
Not today.
Not today. Well,
Oh, man. That's a great question.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, if you'd asked me a week ago, I would have said, absolutely not, no, never, no way. But I don't know. I wouldn't want to, you know, who knows? I feel like
Let me help you with this one, because this is what they say happens. So you have a child, and the birth of the child, literally what you want to die. It's the worst pain ever. But yet somehow the pain, you forget it. And then you're like, I'm going to have another kid. And so this is like you're like thinking about having another kid already. You just had a baby, girl.
Yeah.
You stole my reply there. That's what I was
going to say. Oh, see.
You took Aunt Barb's reply.
Oh, Leslie, you have inspired me. I am going to accomplish something that I've been thinking of. But you have inspired so many who know you personally and who know your journey to that very bump on the road that you had there. So we just wanted to say we love you.
Aw, love you.
Thanks, Aunt Barb. I appreciate it.
Okay. Amazing yeah. lady. I got some ladies in my family.
Aunt Barb is basically like, your vajayjay is going to heal. Get out there and do it again. Have another baby.
By the way, I have a message from Devin Horn that says you're going with her next year. So I don't think you have a choice, actually. So, Devin says hi. We, you know, I don't know if you know it, but we did the first night we were going to do coverage. We did a Facebook Live just to cover your first night, and that was going to be it. But we had 3,500 people watch it. So it was like, well, I guess we got to do this every night now. So we did every night. And Devin was so kind to join in. And she said, and what's next for her? It's with me. So I think whatever Devin's adventures are, you're going along, girl.
Okay.
So here's the thing. First, a couple questions. Have you watched any of those videos of them breaking down the race?
I know I have. You know, I've been just really since I've been home, I have just been riding my pony. And so I've not gotten a chance to catch up on a ton of the coverage.
Just say no. It's okay. No. Just say no.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you don't want to watch it. You don't want to watch it. Hey, we have April coming up next. Good morning, April. Let's see if we can get April on here.
Good morning.
Are you there?
Hi, good morning. Yes, I am. Good morning, Glenn, Jamie, and Leslie.
Morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to call in and tell you, I'm sure you've heard 100 times what an inspiration you are. And that, you know, the thing I love about HRN is this embodiment for a mini Sarah that shows us what courage is. And, you know, take life by the horns when you can, all the way to you, Leslie, who says, okay, I'm going to take life, you know, by the horns, and I'm going to run with it and show these adventures. And you just need to know that your ability to make us feel like we're going with you is so amazing for us people who are sitting at home. You know, I'm there with my three kids and husband going, I'm never going to do any of this. But you have the ability to make us feel like we're there. And it really, you know, gets to take a piece of our soul with you. So thank you so much. And I just want to know what part of the race, you know, has set with you as a basis for what you're going to carry on, you know, as you go forward in competition and things like that.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, April. That means so much. You know, I definitely had moments out there when I was like, am I doing this in a vacuum? Why am I doing this? And is it selfish, you know? And then to come home and to hear that, you know, it actually had a ripple effect out just makes it really worthwhile. But
what's your takeaway?
What's the takeaway, man? I mean, I think I have a ton of takeaways. But gosh, I mean, I'm still like trying. I'm like, where, do,
long
I even,
journey.
Where do I even
yeah.
start?
Maybe in a month we'll ask that question again.
But I think, you know, I think it's sort of the importance of in our world, in our lives, we kind of try to avoid discomfort at all costs. We try and avoid suffering, and that it's okay to embrace discomfort. It's okay to put yourself in in situations that maybe you're going to fail, maybe, you know, that aren't a lock for you really, excelling in them and get, you know, and get used, get, more comfortable just being uncomfortable, you know, that's not how life works. We're not going to be comfortable all the time. And so the more we can, it's just like anything else. It's like the more you practice it, the better you get at it. And then when the hard stuff comes your way, you know what you've got to work with, and you know what you're capable of, and you know what you're enduring, and you're capable of enduring, and you can do it.
Great question. Great answer.
Yeah. And then you become Devin Horn.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. Thank you so much. And I'll just say that I was out riding one day complaining. I was like, oh, I'm getting sore. My husband had heard me talk about you just a little bit. And he's like, God, it's not like you're riding the Mongol Derby or anything. And I'm like,
that's everybody's quote from now on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was like, sure. I'll do my quarter mile and I'll shut up. Thanks again and good luck.
Thanks, April.
Thank you, April.
All right. Yeah. We have
doing the sitting trot doesn't seem so painful. Yeah. Not like it's a Mongol Derby, for God's sake.
You know, we need t-shirts that says it's not like it's the Mongol Derby. We could sell a million t-shirts with that on it. Leslie, get on that, all right?
You can it's take not that like one. It's the Mongol Derby.
You need that one, Leslie, and with your name at the bottom.
No, you know what? You just need to have a car, like have a bunch of business cards in your pocket, and when people complain, you just hand them one of those and be like, "It's not like it's the Mongol Derby, bitch." Like, I mean, seriously.
All right, we have Nikki calling in next, who's one of our great auditors, who I think donated to the cause. Hi, Nikki. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Glenn. Hey, Jamie. Hey, Leslie.
Hey, Nikki.
I'm so excited for you. Like, I rode every step of the way with you. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And like, everybody keeps saying you're inspiring. You really are. The problem is you're gassing me up. I'm like, I'm going to do this. And my husband's like, you don't even camp. Like, what are you doing? Like, I'm like, no, I'm going to do this.
I'll let this up to you. You know.
So now my new motto is, what would Wiley do? I'm like, you guys have to do things that are stupid. I'm like, incredible. But now, seriously, it's like, I was so glad you finished the race. I'm like, oh my God, just don't get hurt. But it must have been just amazing adventure.
It was, yeah, incredible. And thank you so much for your support through it too. I mean, that really, I can't tell you guys enough, like how meaningful that was to me, and how much just get you guys knowing that you guys believed in me helped me out there to believe in myself. And when I wanted to just throw in the towel, I was like, nope, you owe it. You know, you owe it to these people that support you. They support you. They believe in you. You can believe in yourself, you know? So it really got me through.
Oh my gosh, you just started a new hashtag by calling in, because I think that what we all need to do now is hashtag find our Mongol Derby. You know, like make Leslie's
another
discomfort.
T-shirt.
Another t-shirt is find your Mongol Derby. You know, find the thing that's hard for you. No, we can't all go over to Mongolia and ride ponies, but if we find, what's your Mongol Derby? You know, what's your big challenge? What's your way to create discomfort, to learn about comfort? I think that this is, I'm in. Yeah. I'm going to find my Mongol Derby. I got to go.
Yeah. Well, so push your limits, you know, push the boundaries. Right. And that's what I think you inspired us to do, is push beyond, ourselves. And I just, you know, even if just to watch you do it, but also then to say, like Jamie just said, you know, little things, just push it beyond. And that's what I said, like, what will Wiley do? Like, push it to the next level and, you know, explore. So, you know, thank you for that inspiration. Thank you for, you know, going on this adventure, letting us live through it, because it really is. And we live, you know, through you in the Mongol seats.
Okay, Nikki, that means you have to go sleep in the backyard tonight. That's a start.
And my husband's still trying to get that. He's like, you said you do this.
Find your Mongol Derby, sister. In your backyard.
Everyone has ponies around.
Thanks, Nikki.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye. I think Nikki was one of the ones like me. We were like, we don't want it to end. We don't want the Mongol. That was so fun to follow along. And I'm sure you're probably like, when is it going to end?
Yeah, we do have a couple lines open. We have a couple more callers. 435-272-1997. We have Courtney up next. Good. Let me see. I got to get her on here. Good morning, Courtney.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Leslie, how are you?
Oh, man, I'm so great. It's great to hear from you.
Awesome. I don't know if you remember who I am, but I volunteered with you back at the Eventing Nation tailgate at Rolex. You put me in charge of chin. After I told you I killed him.
That Courtney! Absolutely!
Yeah, so I just wanted to call in and tell you that not only has this really solidified that you're an inspiration, but you've kind of been my inspiration for years. Going back to when I saw you running, I think it was at River Glen, I'm not really sure, in your pigtails with your black paint under your eyes. I don't know if you remember that or even how long ago.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. That was definitely a phase of my life.
I was definitely quite a bit younger back then as well. But you just, I don't know, you exuberate inspiration everywhere you go. And meeting you in person finally at Rolex, you always have a smile on your face. You have a personality that's as easy to talk to. And you were seriously like my spirit animal, especially now after the Mongol Derby. And not that you need like my validation, but if ever you are feeling down, just know that someone out in Tennessee is totally looking up to you.
Aw, shucks.
Oh, that's very nice. That is very
You're
nice.
You're so sweet.
Thank you. Thank you, Courtney. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Aw, that's
thank
so nice.
Thank you, guys. Forward to
aww.
Seeing you at Rolex again.
Yeah!
You have a volunteer forever. You can count on Courtney. She's going to be there.
The good news is, Courtney, Leslie lives in Tennessee as well, so I'd be happy to give you her home address and you can just go hang out with her.
Yes! seriously.
Yeah.
One of my friends used to board at her barn. And then, of course, I know Alex, too. So I know where Leslie's at. Don't worry.
You have stalkers. You do have stalkers.
I'll show up on your doorstep.
All right. So thank you, Courtney. Appreciate it.
Courtney, right. You're awesome. Jane. I remember her from the tailgate, too.
Yeah,
so,
I did too.
Yeah. So
I know. I could say all those same things about it. She's easy to talk to. She's like ray of sunshine, Courtney.
We have some more callers coming in. Jennifer's going to get them screened here quick. But in the meantime, I have something I want to say to you is thank you for not dying. Because I would have felt very bad about the whole thing. So, and that was Tommy and I's joke about through the whole thing was your husband and I, we kept going back and forth. He said, you know, it's not your fault. She probably would have done it anyway. Eventually you just rushed it along.
So my question for you is, especially after reading what he wrote, how has this changed your marriage? Because I can't fathom the depths of support that coming on the air and writing these articles and being just such a bigger, better half for you. How has it changed that?
Oh man, Tommy's one of those, he just rose up to the occasion. He, I think he understands, I don't think, you know, I think his, I can't be the easiest person to be married to, but I think he understands what drives me, and he is always always been so amazing about nourishing that part of me that, you know, and feeds me in that way, and so supportive. And when I was out there, I mean, I had like a few little happy places that when things got really dark out there, I would think about, and that would kind of, you know, keep me putting one foot in front of the other. And he was, you know, the primary one. Absolutely. And then, you know, he was, to come home, and he, you know, he's been so involved in keeping people posted and sharing the narrative of the race as it went along. And I just can't even tell you how amazing he's been this summer and through this whole thing, just really, just supportive beyond
Well,
you know,
he agrees because he's just sending me a private message that says she's amazing, but she's always been amazing and strong ever since I met her, even when I was still an idiot and a bad boyfriend. So, so he's just making up for that stage now. So he's still kissing up for that. And then he said, I'm just glad she's home. So he's listening, too. Yeah. And there's somebody else, too, that I saw pictures of and got to be friends with during this whole thing. And that's your sister, Emily, who's on here with us right now. Good morning, Emily.
Hey.
Hey,
Les.
Oh, I love you so much. I've been up this morning. I woke up to feed your little nephew at 5 a.m. out here in California time, and it was perfect transition just to hop online and hear you talk about this crazy adventure. And I'm just sitting here with a cup of coffee, wishing I was sitting with you and just hugging you and loving on you, and I'm just so glad you're home. And you know, I was in tears leading up to this.
I know. Emily lives in California, you know, and I live in Tennessee. And literally the last time we saw each other, which was, when was that, Em?
It was in July. Yeah,
in July. And she just started crying, and we were hugging each other, and she was just like, be safe. I'm like, okay, I will.
Don't die. Please don't come die. Home.
Yeah. And so, oh, man.
But, I just, gosh, you know, I know you know, or have been told, you know, just the amount of people that have been rallying behind you and following this whole adventure. But I mean, people that you've never even met out here where we live have just been following you every day, praying for you and just following along the adventure. And we just loved watching it. And you're just, for me personally, I mean, you know, I love you and I've always looked up to you, but this is, you're just have, I don't know, gone above and beyond what I could even call a sister. You're just so strong and someone I just will forever, ever look up to. And so many people have said the same thing, that they don't even know you, but they just aspire to be more like you. And I just hope you can feel that and soak in all of the positivity that's coming your way.
Aw, Em, you're gonna make me weepy.
Well, and that begs the next question too, is besides Em, what was the family support like? Or was it, I mean, do they know you so well, they're like, you go girl, or were they like, you're crazy, don't do this?
Or were they like, that dumbass is doing it again?
Yeah.
Oh man, no, my family is amazing, and they've been.
Maybe I should ask this to Emily. Emily, what did they say behind her back?
So there's this the Leslie Wiley Derby fan club that started, and it was Tommy and Tommy's mom and sister and our aunt Linda and our other sister Jennifer and mom, and we had a group text going, and so every night. I think it was like 7 o'clock in Tennessee, and it was 4 o'clock out here. The text would get going, and everyone was saying, okay, I've run out to the store and got my pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream and my box of Oreos. And we all logged on and started watching the dot. And it was, you know, the red dot watching party. And we just sat there like, texting back and forth. Oh, she's almost made it to, you know, this check-in point. And, but through the day, you know, everybody was just, you know, it was all speculation. Oh, what is she doing, you know, here? She's at the shopping mall. She's waking up and eating Cinnabon before she gets out. Or why isn't she moving? Or why is her dot going in circles? Or, you know, what's happening? You know, it was all speculation, but it was so fun. You know, it was like, we didn't want it to end, really. You know, when it came to day 9, we all were like, oh my gosh, we're going to be so sad not watching the dot. And
Yeah, but nobody here got any sleep either, Leslie. Right, Emily? None of us slept for nine days.
No one slept. No, we were all exhausted, walking zombies for like a week and a half, but it was totally worth it. But yeah, the support was, it actually brought the family, I think, closer together, even though we were, you know.
So far apart. And that's technology, right? I mean, that because of technology, you were able to do that. And that's very cool. You know, Leslie, you got to the point where where our listeners were hounding their Twitter feed so bad at the Mongol Derby that who was the guy in charge of Blood Wagon that we talked to? What was his name?
Eric.
Eric started sending private messages back to Devin to relay on the show every night, because they were following the show every night, to relay on the show to tell, and this was his message. Would you tell the Horses in the Morning people she's fine? Because apparently they were getting bugged so much.
That was my question, were the Mongol Derby people like, what the hell? Is this for,
yeah.
Like,
who is she?
So many people.
The best thing club out there.
I will say this, because of your fans over on your side and the fans over here, the Mongol Derby has never had as much free publicity as they did this year. So that's
And that's the thing, is did they ever say something to you? Because the chick that's doing all the tweets, who was hilarious, by the way, I mean, you must be seeing her periodically. Did she ever say anything to you like, dude, the Twitter feed is crazy because of you?
I never even thought about, and you know, like social media never, or that there was even an outside world that existed anymore. Like, didn't really exist. Like, I didn't really, like occur to me frequently during the race, and because I was just like, okay, just me and the pony in the middle of nowhere. And and then when I crossed the finish line, one of the gals, Dumpling from the Derby crew, came up to me and she's like, oh, you're the darling of the Derby, you've gone viral. And I was like, what does that mean? I don't know. I just need a shower, and you know, but there's people in the world outside of this. So that was when it was brought to my attention.
See, that's the part I couldn't do. I don't know about you, Emily, but the part I couldn't do is not shower for 10 days and be in the same clothes, not showered for 10 days. That must have been a ripe group at that group photo at the finish line.
Oh, it was stanky. Yeah.
Oh my God. But if you're ever going to have an excuse to not shower, just own it. I would be like, okay, this is how I'm going to live. Let's own it.
At one point at one of the horse stations, there was a creek that was pretty clear, and I just laid down in it for probably 15 minutes and just just laughed maniacally. I was so happy.
With your clothes on, or did you strip down naked?
My clothes on, yeah.
Yeah. No, she wasn't stripping down naked anywhere in Mongolia after the first day.
True.
Well, thank you, Emily. It's so nice of you to call. We really appreciate it.
Aww, oh, yeah. Love you, Les. So much. Can't wait to hug you.
I know.
All right. Bye, Emily.
And then, so that's the thing, is did you bring spare underwear or clothes or socks? Or, I mean, how does that work?
I mean, I had in my saddlebag, I had brought one pair of spare clothes, you know, in case, you know, just to switch in and out of, and nope, you know, goodbye. Goodbye.
Close. Devin talked. Bye. You're going to love this. You'll appreciate this. The one night we were talking on the air, she said, yeah, it got so bad. I didn't have any spare underwear. By the fifth day, I was so sick of those underwear. They smelled so bad. I just threw them in a bush. And I rode commando the rest of the way. We're like, how do you ride commando for 4 days?
I thought about it for sure.
You did?
I turned him inside out.
Does that really work, by the way?
Inside out, back front. Yeah. There's a system to it, I'm sure.
Leslie, what? We already asked the question, what are you going to take away from this? So I want to ask one of Devin's questions. What were you most surprised about? And then her second question, what's your favorite memory? Not a takeaway, but a memory.
Yeah. I think what was I most surprised? I was incredibly surprised by, the adaptability that we have as humans, that we don't have to call on, quite as often as, you know, probably our ancestors have. Like we can adapt to anything with really like pretty seamlessly. And you know, whatever is becomes your new normal, you know? Yeah. And whether it's a culture, you know, whether it's, like we figure out a way to communicate with people who don't share a common language with us. We figure out, you know, how to adapt to changing climates and environments and mental and physical challenges. And that's something that we don't have to practice very much in our day-to-day lives. And I think we forget that that's something that we possess. And I was surprised by how adaptable I was and how adaptable the people were around me. So that was pretty surprising. And then what was question number two?
What was your favorite memory? But yeah, favorite. Just on that point, that was beautiful. Oh my gosh. You're like a new Leslie. I don't even know who you are anymore. You're so pensive and well thought out and organized. It's weird. Who are you? Speaking of that, we actually have somebody on hold who probably could shed some light on who this girl is.
That's right. I'm trying to get her on now. Hi, Mom.
Hi. How's it going?
Your mom is on the phone. Hey, Mama, Mom. turn your radio down. This is live, so you got
to
turn your radio down.
You've been waiting to say that for 10 years, haven't you, Jamie?
I know.
Hey, Mama, turn your radio down.
Oh,
technology. Mom's in technology.
I got it turned down.
There
I
you go.
I got it turned down.
Leslie's mom is on the phone. She brought you into this world, Leslie. Hey, girl. She'd take you out.
I just want you to know that I have been listening to this whole radio show. And even at the beginning, I was astounded to hear what happened.
Oh, see, Mom, you weren't supposed to listen. We tried to send you a different yeah. link, but it didn't work, apparently.
Yeah. No. I read a slight bit about it last night when I was reading your newest article. But I didn't know the whole story.
But you know what, Mom? She handled it like the tough girl you raised. There was no Mongolian drunk guy getting over on Leslie. That was not happening. It was not happening.
And, I know you can handle it.
I hate to see what Mongolian justice system is like. That can't be good for that guy.
Like, arrested seems like a loose.
Yeah, kind of think like, it does. Kind of think it does.
Any jails out there?
No, that's true.
The jail is right next to the mall.
Yeah. Well, Mom, were you proud of your daughter?
Oh, so proud. Her dad and I are so proud. And we were up for every night, all night, watching that red dot. And like Emily said, we were walking zombies.
Aww.
But it was all worth it. And we are so proud of you and love you so much.
Aww. Well, thank you so much, Mom.
Thank you. Yeah. We appreciate you calling in.
You guys raised me to be the gal I am. So
okay, hey. Take care.
Well,
aw.
All right. Bye.
Ellen's like it's getting too mushy.
No,
move
we're
on.
Just running out of time. we're at the end of the show already. Now I realize we only covered a touch of what's happened over this whole period of time, but you're covering it in great detail on horsenation.com. You've put out three stories already. There'll be a couple more to come. If you haven't read those, these are Pulitzer Prize winning stuff here. This is, if you don't submit these someplace to win awards, you should, because you're not only are you a tough badass, but you're also a great writer. So, and a good storyteller. It really, really is well done.
Aw, thanks. Well, there are more to come. Got another part or two of the series left to write. So,
well, and I think, you know, I think that I think the Mongol Derby got a new respect for the power of the media in this one. I don't know that they're going to want you back because we harass them so bad. But I looked like, and I want to end with this, it looked, and I give a shout out to them, unless this isn't true, but it looked like they really did hustle to make this happen. They were hustling as much as you guys were. And I mean the staff and the vets and the medical people and just trying to get the GERS set up with the horse stations next to, with the rain and the torrential. They kept getting stuck in mud. And they, you know, talk to us a little bit about them before we end today.
It is an incredible undertaking that I can't even wrap my mind around. I mean, the sheer logistics of, they had to find 1,400, sort of audition 1,400 horses for the race, is how many horses ended up getting used. And then they had to get all of those horses from wherever they were to horse stations and then back to make sure they got back to their homes. Like the, from the vet, team was top notch. The medical team was top notch. You know, wrangling. I'm sure that we are not the most domesticated herd of people you've ever encountered. 42. You know,
type A's,
riders. And then the crew, and then making sure that we had, you know, like a pretty culturally, you know, that we were able to function in that culture and, you know, all that mutton, you know, it was incredible. And I know that they work really hard and they create this really incredible environment for, I mean, how often in life do you get the chance to really challenge yourself like that and find the bottom of yourself and yet you're still, there is a safety net at the bottom of it. You can get into a whole bunch of trouble. But you know, ultimately there is something, there is a system there to bail you out, if you need it. And it's just an incredible undertaking.
And if you don't ride horses and you're listening to this, they have a number of these kind of challenges that you can do that are as crazy, but don't involve horses. So so you can check that out at the Mongol Derby website.
So let's end the show with your, this is the, Devin's other question was your favorite memory.
Favorite memory. Oh man, I really did. I had a lot of incredible memories, but I think maybe my, the one that stands out is, was maybe a day or two from the end. I'd sort of hooked in with some great people. We were just towing each other along, and trying to, you know, keep it positive. And everyone was dealing with their challenge. You know, one of the guys we were riding with, Cy, he'd been riding with a broken rib since day three. You know, we'd all had lots of hardship to endure, but just the fact that we could stop for a minute. There was a moment when we looked over, we were trying to figure out where we were wanting to go. And there was this incredible rainbow coming down over the mountain, like kind of actually looked like it was ending right at where the horse station was supposed to be. And we're like, okay, that's it. Let's ride toward the rainbow, and rainbow marks the spot. And we were just kind of galloping toward it. And just being able to, despite all of the, you know, the tough stuff, and trying challenges that we encountered, to still be able to have moments like that, that we could fully, you know, just be awed, just still absolutely awed by the splendor around us and this incredible world that we live in, and it's all of its beauty and all of its challenges and all of its mysteries. And I think, like, that's something that's really applicable to life too, is, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the day to day, just kind of, you know, one thing after the next, one challenge after the next, one hardship after the next. And to remind yourself that it's important that we, all the time, that we're able to take a step back and be like, but wow, how about this life, you know?
Right.
and that was just sort of a moment that encapsulated that.
Well said, my friend. Well said. Oh, thank you, Leslie.
You've grown up before very eyes.
I know. 10 days, and now she's an adult. Now that's it's only taken her 30 some years, but now she's an adult in 10 days.
That's still up in the air.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah, no, we do expect you back to work next Monday, right? For your regular segment.
She could relax. Right. Yeah. And this is what I said to my other friend who competed, Madison Kaufman, competed the Mongol Derby a couple of years ago. And we're at a horse trial and she's walking around and I just stopped her and I go, I'm like, these people don't even know what you've done. They don't know. Like, you're going to be walking around in a world, Leslie Wiley, where some people don't know you rode in the Mongol Derby. And it's going to be hard not to just be like, I am better than all of you because I did this thing. But it's true. Like, just know that we will never forget this. We will never forget that you were the girl that got this done. It's like the respect I have for my friend Madison after having completed this. Is it just changed? It changed her as a human, and it's changed you, and it's changed the way we all look at you. And we're just so unbelievably proud of being a part of this whole journey, and you allowing us to be a part of this whole journey from we've been there when you entered the race to this talk right now. And we're just incredibly honored to have been a part of it, and so proud of you for doing it and taking us along with you.
Aw, well, thank you guys. I mean, it's a two-way street. I couldn't have done it without everybody's support. So,
well, good job.
Good job, all of us.
Let's take the show out with the Alti Band from Mongolia. Does this sound familiar? Bye, everybody. See you tomorrow. Western Show. Whole line of t-shirts coming out soon.